My name is Gord Hill. I'm from the Kwakwaka'wakw Nation, and my people's territory is on the northwest coast of occupied British Columbia. I've been involved in the anti-Olympic organizing for the last couple of years, and before that I was involved with the Native Youth Movement and a lot of different groups over the years here in the west coast.
What would be for you, what would be the struggle that you shared that you think it's our interesting struggle, Native struggle in Canada?
I think, the Native struggles are for the land and that, so there's all kinds of local struggles that are going on across the country. Because as you know, in Canada, Native people make up, they say, about 5% of the population. Under the Indian Act, there's a lot of the people were put onto the reservations. And in BC, we have, most of the reserves in Canada are based in BC. So we have 196 bands here. Right now, the current land struggles that are defining or shaping our movement right now are, of course, the Six Nations land reclamation in Ontario, the Tiendanega Mohawks. And then here in BC, we've been mostly focusing on ski resorts, stopping ski resorts like Shuticath and Squaquequot in the Chukwemeck territory. Right now we're trying to tie a lot of these local struggles here in BC into the anti-Olympic campaign, because we see it as it's a real danger with the corporate invasion that it represents. So, other than that, there's in northern BC, there's a lot of struggles against mining and logging, and that's kind of similar across northern Canada. But right now in BC, because the government has changed a lot of regulations and that, and made it easier for corporations to get into these different industries like oil and gas, mining, and the ski resorts. So that's mostly what my focus is and what I'm mostly aware of right now. I know there's other struggles in northern Ontario against uranium and that, but I'm not very much aware of those right now.
What is, for you, the better ways to fight in this situation against the Olympics and the ski resorts?
Well, the only real strategy we have is the grassroots organizing of the people, because we can't rely on the band councils, which are established by the government, right? So a lot of our work, we have to avoid a lot of those, the political organizations that are established, like not only the band councils, but the Assembly of First Nations and the regional AFN here in BC. So that's what we mostly do, is work with grassroots people, youth and elders who want to maintain their traditions and defend their people and their territories. So that's the main method that we use.
Can you talk more about the political organization that was interesting for you?
Well, the Assembly of First Nations is comprised of all the Indian Act band chiefs from across Canada. So there's about just over 600 of them, right? 600 bands across Canada. So that's what the AFN is comprised of, about 600 chiefs. And they were set up by the federal government in the early 1980s, and we see their purpose is basically to help implement the government policies on the reservations. Other than that, there's other different political organizations. They're mostly program and service providers, like in the urban areas. Like here we have the United Native Nations, and a lot of the programs and services are important, but ultimately they're implementing the government policies, programs, and services. So sometimes we have some work with them, we collaborate with them sometimes, but for the most part, we just stay with our grassroots organizing and avoid those political organizations. Yeah. There's other provincial type organizations across the country, but I'm not very much aware of them. You know, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Ontario, they all have the same types of organizations. So
what's the need? What would be the need so the fight could emancipate?
What do we need? Well, one thing is we just need to raise awareness and consciousness, education among our people and among the general public about what these different issues are and the threats and the destruction that they cause and that, right? So education and consciousness, but we need more resources, we need to mobilize our communities and that, but we also have a lot of social dysfunction in our community, so that's something that always has to be addressed, the alcoholism and the drug addiction and the abuse that people suffer, and this is the legacy of the residential schools and colonialism, so this is a big problem in our movement right now, it's just this social dysfunction. And then in regards to something specific like the Olympics, like along with that type of work, like increasing the economic uncertainty for corporations so that they're hesitant to invest in regions where there's the potential for resistance that's going to disrupt their business as usual. And here in BC, part of their problem has been a lot of litigation, like legal action by band councils and different political organizations that challenge corporations or the government to come into their territories. So that's created some economic uncertainty for the corporations, and that's why they have something like the BC Treaty Process, right, where they want to resolve this outstanding land question and have it that there's no more problems, there's no more threat of litigation. But of course, that's only one aspect of things, because the litigation thing can be like they can be bought out if they get a good deal. The band councils or their political groupings will take the money, and they'll gain more power. So there's a power struggle between the band councils and the government that we always have to keep in mind. I forget what the question was. So the economic uncertainty, like if we can increase that, like on, like by blocking their projects or oil and gas pipelines or whatever, these kinds of things, then that will help deter, in our minds, that will help deter the corporate invasion of the territories, and it'll at least limit the negative effects of things like the Olympics, right? And then, of course, we want to use the Olympics to expand our movement, to educate our people about the process of colonization and the role of the government and the corporations and that, you know. So we use it as an opportunity to get out there, and, you know, it's just like an issue that we can go to people and talk to them about and bring up all the other, you know, the history and stuff like that.
Can you talk about the organization you are involved in, like in the Native Youth Movement?
Well, I'm not involved in the Native Youth Movement anymore.
You was involved in
the
Movement. And other movement you are involved?
Right now I'm just focusing on the anti-Olympic resistance right now. So
independently or on an organization?
Well, yeah, independently, but I also work with the Olympic Resistance Network, which is just established the last few months. And before that, there was, we tried setting up different coalitions and networks. One of them was the Native 2010 Resistance, so that was another group that I worked with. So we're just still in the movement. We're still like formulating the organization that we're going to have to fight against the Olympics. And right now it's the Olympic Resistance Network, so I'm working with them. We're organizing different public events and speaking tours to get the word out so that we can draw people here for February 2010. So we have a convergence here, so we're trying to travel around a lot right now across North America to get the word out and to get people here so that they can help us stop the disrupt the Olympics.
How can we get more information about that?
Right now we have our website, which is no2010.com, no2010.com, and I believe people are going to be working on other websites in the near future. But if you just go to that website, it'll have pretty much all the information, the background about the Olympics, and the actions that have occurred recently. So it's a good source of information. Yeah.
Can you talk about information, the magazines or publication in general, who can be interesting for people to know more about struggles, on your point of view?
Well, I publish a magazine. It's called Warrior. Published through Warrior Publications, which is on the web as well. It's www.warriorpublications.com. I publish it infrequently. There's another magazine, Redwire, which is a government-funded magazine, which until recently was a good source of information, but there was some problems with them. They fired a couple of their staff members who were the only people involved in any grassroots organizing, So Redwire as a source of information is a bit weak right now, but maybe it'll change because it depends on who the staff members are and who the editors are. But they got a website as well, redwire.com, I think it is, redwiremag.com or something. other than that, there's NYM Communications at hotmail.com that people can contact. But overall, you know, we don't have a lot of publications. The native newspapers that exist are basically corporate media, like our version of the corporate media. So they're not really helpful, and they're not really getting the word out. You know, a lot of them are kind of pro-Olympics. They're just pro-business. So the sources of information are limited, and then that no2010.com is our main source of information right now.
Can you talk about the reaction of the people about the Olympics? How do you have a lot of support, solidarity, people in struggles with you?
I believe so. You can see across Canada a lot of the direct actions that have taken place. Here in the city, a lot of people aren't happy with the Olympics because of especially because of the homelessness that it's created. Like, there's a couple thousand people have been made homeless because of these renovations of low-income housing and that down here in the downtown east side primarily. So a lot of people in the city here are not very happy with the Olympics. Out in the rural areas, I think there's a lack of information and education around the Olympics right now, and that's what we're working to change, right? So we are producing leaflets and stickers and that to get out there. But once people are made aware of the different issues, because when they look at the Olympics, they just see the media hype and, you know, how good the Olympics are, like what a great event it is, you know, sports and amateur sports and, you know, that kind of stuff. But once you scratch the surface a little bit, it's pretty obvious what the Olympic industry is. You know, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry backed by the government and corporations who just want to use the Olympic Games as a platform for advertising and consumerism and that. So I think once people become aware, there's more support for anti-Olympic resistance. I would say, surprisingly, because of the direct actions that have occurred, there's a significant level of support for anti-Olympic action. And I'm talking about the recent arsons that have occurred in Toronto and Vancouver against some of the corporate sponsors and the construction company out here that's expanding the Sea to Sky Highway. And those kinds of things, you know, sometimes in a campaign that could stop people from supporting it, but in this case, it seems to be, it's keeping it in the public mind that there's this resistance and that it's a very serious resistance. You know, like if you consider these arson attacks, people could face up to 14 years imprisonment for damage to property with an arson. So, you know, people are out there taking some serious risks, which is something to be, you know, recognized, even if people don't support that type of direct action. So, you know, and we're also like, year and a half away from the games, beginning in February 2010. So what we've seen so far is, I think it's been really good, like a good development of a campaign. This far away from the actual event, that there's these kinds of actions occurring and this kind of, mobilizing and stuff like that. So it'll be very interesting to see how in February 2010 things develop. One thing that we're looking at right now is the torch relay, which begins in the fall of 2009, which we think will be very significant because it's really important for the Olympic organizers that they have a torch relay because it promotes the Olympics and it creates a large media hype around it. But we can see with the Beijing Olympics, their torch relay, what a disaster it turned into when people were protesting it because of the repression that occurred in Tibet. So there's a lot of potential there, and when 2010 comes, there's going to be, you know, they estimate 3 billion television viewers are going to be tuned into that, and that's half the world's population. So that's a great opportunity to express resistance and to try to inspire people. Yeah.
What is the consequences now of the 2010 Olympics?
Well, the
was thinking about the Sea to Sky Highway.
Yeah,
it was one of the reasons was building this road is for the 2010 Olympics.
Yeah,
and can you talk about the other consequences?
Well, there's a number of different impacts of the Olympics because it's such a massive industry that affects it affects regions and a lot of different people and communities. The main one that I mentioned earlier was the homelessness here in Vancouver that's been created by the move by developers to clear out the low-income housing and to make it into expensive tourist accommodations for the 2010 and the tourist market. So that's the most immediate impact, the social impact, the human impact is on the homelessness. Other than that, the ecological impact is, yeah, the Sea to Sky Highway expansion. There's a lot of venues that have been constructed here, like hockey rinks and skiing venues up in Whistler, these kinds of things. And that ecological impact is like on the Sea to Sky Highway. It's the destruction of the trees and the mountainsides, and up in Whistler, they're clear cutting small areas. Like, they're cutting down tens of thousands of trees. For all the concrete that they're using, they're going into the like a lot of river basins and that. Like, the Fraser River is being mined for gravel. I think it was in 2006. There was millions of salmon that died as a result of all this, quarrying of gravel for their concrete production. So that's another big impact. Overall, the corporate invasion that 2010 will facilitate is, that's going to create more environmental destruction because of the nature of the industries that they're promoting through 2010, which is the mining, oil and gas, and the ski resort industries. So that's the main environmental impacts. Repression, there's going to be a build-up for their security. It's going to be one of the largest security operations in Canadian history. They're going to have like 12,500 soldiers and police. They're going to have special security zones, CCTV video surveillance systems, NORAD, the North American Air Defense Agency is going to be patrolling the skies. They're going to have the city on lockdown. So that's another impact that we're facing now, though, because with their policing measures, they want to clamp down on the anti-Olympic protests, which we see in every Olympic Games. They do that, and the police get new tools and weapons to do this kind of repression. So, like, for example, the Vancouver police are acquiring two armored personnel carriers so they can use them in crowd control situations and stuff like that. Another impact that we're concerned about is the impact on women, because as you may know, in the Vancouver has experienced a lot of deaths with missing and murdered women. There's over 70, I think, missing and murdered women from the downtown east side. Picton was arrested and charged with a number of these, but there's a lot of missing and murdered women across Canada, but here in the city of Vancouver. So we're concerned about the impact of 2010 and the kind of sex tourism that accompanies these large-scale spectacles. So that's another concern. those are the main impacts of 2010 that we're looking at and that we're the most concerned about.
Except the new 2010.com, do you know other website where it can be interesting to consult?
Yeah, there's the Olympics. 2010 Games Watch, which I think it's run by Chris Shaw. You just Google that or something. It's run by Chris Shaw. He's a long-time vocal opponent of the Olympics. And him and Conrad Schmidt also collaborate on a video documentary. It's called Five Ring Circus, and a book that's just recently published that's called Five Ring Circus as well. And there's some books that were published by, I think she's a professor out of Toronto. And she's published a number of books, some of them about the Sydney Olympics, which we learned a lot from because of the similarities to Canada and the Aboriginal component in Australia. But if you get onto those websites, yeah, you'll be able to link to the other websites and get more information.
Okay, and you want to add something?
Thanks for doing the interview and the work that you guys are doing in Quebec. It's really important and helpful to us, and it's a good way that we expand our networks, like just trying to organize around the Olympics. Like, we meet with different people from different areas. I would just encourage people to get educated about the 2010 Winter Olympics, and to consider coming here in February 2010 to help us in on the streets to disrupt or shut down the Olympic Games, and to increase our resistance against the system in general. Yeah.
Maybe just a question also. You were talking about the corporate invasion. Can you just define a little bit more what it is for you, corporate invasion?
Well, with the 2010 Winter Olympics, they have a 2010 investment strategy that they want to attract corporate investment, and they have the provincial government here has streamlined the application process for those different industries, like mining, oil and gas, and the ski resort industry in particular. So, and they're using the 20 can as a platform to attract the corporations here to expand those industries. So that's what I mean by corporate invasion, is these corporations coming in, riding the 2010 wave, and they're getting a lot of breaks from the government because the government's trying to encourage this type of investment. So that's what we're talking about.
We was reading this week this very good brochure you made. You are somewhere else, but around your perspective about war and the continuity of war against the native population. And this is an example of this continuity, I think.
Yeah, well, yeah, the one thing we promote is that the colonialism itself is a form of warfare to gain territory and resources. So this is something that we've seen in the history, and then we see it continuing on today because, of course, colonization continues on. You know, as long as the colonial occupation force exists, then you're under colonialism, and it is a form of conflict. So, yeah, the 2010 Winter Olympics is a part of that. That they, you know, they want to open up the lands for to take more resources. So that's something that we're opposed to because it threatens the future generations. It threatens the ability of people, indigenous people, to maintain any kind of semblance of traditional culture or way of life. And you know, today, especially with the ecological crisis that we're facing, and how it, you know, it feeds into economics and all that stuff. But as we face this looming environmental catastrophe, they just want to continue the resource exploitation and destruction, and we, you know, that's unacceptable. That we want to resist that and stop it.